Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, things are completely disorganized this morning as normal, but actually I think we're even more disorganized than usual because I have just discovered so much stuff. And the title of the show today, Jab Psychosis and the Destruction of Reason, Logic, and Truth. And the reason, everything I have to do now is in code. You know, I can't just say, COVID vaccine psychosis, you know, because it's going to get immediately flagged on Facebook. And I like to be able to get, you know, stuff out there so people can actually, you know, hear about the show. And we're growing. We're getting a lot of people that are discovering the show. They're discovering previous podcasts. Everything's happening. It's amazingly exciting what's going on. Anyway, before we get to, what could be a very detailed chat about, psychology. And of course, anybody's welcome to join me here, 215-383-3832. You know, and you can always get that. If I said that too fast, it's right there on the front of the website when you tune in. Anyway, so I think I'm done rattling everything around, moving stuff through my theme. And let's get to David Jones. David Jones is one of the co-founders of Santa Rosa Volunteers, these wonderful folks that have commissioned me to create these founding moments. And I'm having a blast doing it because I'm learning things I never thought about. I've discovered the Anti-Federalist Papers are far more accurate in terms of what's happening today than the Federalist Papers were. And it's really just a wonderful experiment. And that's why I put them on YouTube so everybody could share them more easily and not just hear them here and hear them on podcasts, but hear them anytime you want and use that as a reference for anything that you want to do. Anyway, good morning, David. What's going on?
Morning, Greg. What's happening?
Well, I'm on a roll. Today is going to be an in-depth look at the psychosis of COVID, the irrational fears, the manipulating, the fact that this is completely a marketing campaign. It has nothing to do with reality. The fact that the virus, the original one, died out, you know, last year sometime, and yet all the vaccines were created for that old virus. The weird psychology that people, you know, vaccines are a preventive for a future disease. That's why you get a vaccine before you go someplace that has that disease, so you're immune to it. If you try and take a vaccine for a disease that's already here and already dying out, you know, you've heard of the expression, the cart before the horse. this is the extreme example of insanity. So that's what's going on. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know Carl Jung would be very interested in diving into the psychosis of everything that's been going on for sure.
Okay. Are you a student or aficionado of Jungian psychology? Because I'm not. So this would be, you know, let me know. Maybe it's something I should be looking up. But any insights, feel free. What do you think?
I absolutely love his work. Him and Freud did a lot of work early on together. And then when Freud kind of split off with everybody's a deviant and some of the darker philosophies he had, Jung's like, I'm not ready to quite go there. And he kind of took a different path and showed. He did a really good book, Man and His Symbols. I really like that. And then after he passed, they did a what they call a red book and kind of an accumulation of his work. That's a really good one as well.
So, knowing what you know about Jung, and this is fascinating. I had no idea, and this is why I love this show, because everybody knows something about something, and everybody's an expert on something, and it's fascinating to sort of delve into these things. What would Jung say about what's going on today with the irrational fear generated by the marketers at Big Pharma and Big Health Department? That's what I'm now calling the government agencies, FDA, NIH, CDC, the big, you know, government or big health. Big government health. There we go. What would he say about that in terms of how people are being channeled and directed and having this irrational fear cause them to want to wear masks that don't work, to lockdowns that don't work? And if they did work, the virus would have been contained and gone, you know, within, a couple of weeks, maybe a month or two at the most. And yet here they are talking about doing the same thing again. That doesn't work. I don't get it. Help me out here.
Yeah, so it's hard to say what he would do with all of that, but he got into a lot of the dark and light forces that are at work. He was an avid Christian. He was a believer, so he really delved into symbolism in multiple different cultures and how that affected us even in the newer society, taught and things like that across the globe. So we saw a lot of the same things in people who had very vast cultural differences. So he kind of tied all of that together. And that's where he really got into how things that happened a couple thousand years ago were the same symbols and perceptions as he sees in psychiatric facilities in the early 1900s when he was doing it. It was very interesting.
Wow. Hey, listen, if you want to get to a detailed presentation on that, especially, you know, write some stuff down, make some bullet points and relate to what Jung would you know, apply to today, because it is a world problem. You got countries all over the world who are demonizing hydroxychloroquine when we all know it works. You know, they don't want early treatment, yet early treatment works. This is the first disease where nobody can talk about the cure. You can only talk about the prevention, that it's too late to prevent because it's already here. And in fact, it's mostly gone. And yet they're still vaccinating people to prevent something that's almost gone. None of this makes sense.
Right. And in the vaccine, so even the numbers that they're given with, they've already admitted that when you take the vaccine, you can still get COVID.
Right.
I happen to have an inside line to Santa Rosa Hospital, and they currently have around 27 COVID patients. Yeah, absolutely not. All of those patients, with the exception of two, have taken the vaccine. So it's almost
say
like
that again.
The vaccine is starting.
I want everybody to hear that. So how many patients and how many have had the vaccine? This is fascinating.
27 patients, 25 of them have taken the vaccine.
Do you know if they've had – well, that goes with Judy Mikovits, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's been on the show twice. Her contention that the vaccine actually carries the virus and spreads it. You know, and it's interesting that the – you know, I made a post a little while ago. And you have to be careful with these posts because, you know, Facebook's always looking to censor the truth. And I was saying it's fascinating that the rise in Delta variant is coinciding directly with the rise in vaccination rates. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. I don't think so either. There's no way at this point to prove that, but there's too many similarities for those graphs to just be coincidental. It's got to be a causal effect.
Yeah. Hey, if you find a graph that traces both the rise in COVID cases, of course, it's hard to tell the rise in cases because the PCR test was never designed for viruses. You know, I've forgotten exactly. It's a lipid analyze, and I guess lipid is a fat. So I'm not sure how it works exactly, but the inventor of it, the German doctor who came up with the PCR test, said, look, this isn't for COVID. It's not for any virus. And the fact that they amplified the samples by 40 – go ahead. It's what now?
It's not for any diagnostic purpose.
No.
It was only meant to delve into samples known already and multiply those to where you can use a smaller and smaller sample to test the same thing. But it was never never intended for diagnostic reasons.
Yeah. And now the CDC is saying, well, we probably shouldn't do that because we can't really tell which cases are flu. And so we better, get rid of this by, December of this year. It was a little bit late, guys. So the test is wrong. You know, all the results have been wrong up until this point, yet you're still going to use it for the rest of the year and count on the results that they know are wrong. Again, most of this is irrational to me. It's like we're through the looking glass, and this could only come out of fear and psychosis. And that's why I had put on Facebook my definition – well, not my definition, but let me pull it up here because this is kind of cool. The dictionary definition of psychosis, and this is the problem we're under, it says a severe mental disorder in which thought and emotions are so impaired that contact is lost with external reality. I think that's what's going on here. This is a psychosis, a national psychosis.
Well, it sounds accurate. The people I've talked to that buy into it definitely not in touch with reality. And when you show them reality and you show them numbers, you can almost see the wall in their head. You get this weird expression on their face where they just refuse to accept what they're seeing.
You know, it's interesting. Again, not mentioning names, of course, but I have a new rock band. And one of the musicians that came to the rock band who joined the band, I said, look, let's be friends on Facebook, and then we can communicate more easily. We can send samples, music, and stuff back and forth. And he took one look at my page and said, I can't be in your band. I said, why not? He said, you're one of those people. What's one of those people? Help me out here. He says, you, you think that you deny that January 6th was an insurrection. I said, no, I just deny that the Trump supporters were part of it. You know, I said, what I say is that the insurrection happened between the Arizona elector count, which had just started. And that's when the Antifa and the FBI operatives and everybody else walked in and the talk that happened after that. And then when they came back and all voted for Biden, I said, that was the insurrection. Okay. That's what overturned the election from the winner to the loser. And he's like, I can't believe you said that. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're this, you know, the parrot stuff. It's like look, I don't do politics in the band. I mean, that really clear. Everybody knows I don't do politics in the band. That's my respite from politics. That's why I do that. Like everybody has to have an outlet, but yet it was so doctrinaire on the left that could not accept anything that, challenged their preconceived notions, even though those notions are completely wrong. So I understand, but it is like a psychosis. You know, you can't talk to these people. They don't want to hear you.
No, they don't want to hear you. And then when they're talking points and their parroted responses don't work, they just distance themselves. That way they don't have to have an intellectual conversation. Because deep down, I think that at least on a subconscious level, they truly understand that they're not correct.
Well, let's think about that, because I think you're really onto something there. Fear is empty. Okay, there's no fear is not usually built on a rational basis, and we talked about this yesterday and the day before. I came up with kind of a formula for truth: evidence plus logic plus reason equals truth. You need all those components. You need evidence. Okay, you have to have a basis for what you're believing. Okay, whether that's observation or scientific or measure, whatever. You need evidence. You need logic. You know, you have to be able to proceed from the evidence in a logical, rational, orderly fashion to your hypothesis, theory, and conclusion. And you need reason, because you have to have the ability to use the logic. You have to have the cognitive ability to take things and reason them through and pursue and go through the process of from your evidence to truth. And if you use all those three things, and they all fit in, then chances are you pretty much come to truth, at least as far as we can, because there's no absolute, because stuff changes and everything like that. But I'm saying, if you have reason plus logic plus evidence, you're a lot better off with truth. And fear is just the opposite. With fear, there is no logic. It's totally emotional, like Democrats. There is no reason. You don't need a reason to be afraid. You're afraid. That's its own justification. And as for evidence, well, who needs evidence? Fear is like the inverse of truth. What do you think? I just thought of that just now. I mean, this one, glad to have a philosopher on the show. This is, we got to do this more often. This is great. But
and the only thing I would add to your equation, or more accurately subtract, would be a minus perception. Your perception of the world can't have an outcome on your reality. That your truth isn't different because your perception's different. I've seen that a lot. Oh, well, because I'm of this background or that background, and from where I stand, no, truth is truth. You have to have those three elements that you described, but you also have to subtract yourself from that data and that information to get truth.
Okay, so let's put in minus perception. So evidence plus truth plus reason minus perception equals truth. This is getting interesting. I'll have to add that to the formula. Yeah, you're definitely onto something, because it's like people like climate change. Wanting to believe in climate change doesn't make climate change real. And reading evidence of it, even if you believe it's real, is not going to convince you otherwise. So is that perception, or, I'm forgetting all that, because I'm not a psychologist, so I don't have all these terms, right at my fingertips, like I do more of the legal stuff. But yeah, believing, wishful thinking doesn't make it true. Wishful thinking that Trump is a Nazi doesn't make Trump a Nazi. That's an extreme example, but that's what people do. I mean, the extremes point out the lesser examples. Being afraid of COVID doesn't make COVID more dangerous. COVID is what it is. It's a virus.
Well, I think play on all of those different fronts, what the left plays on with climate change, with COVID, with the gas shortages back in the 70s, all their little games, they play on people's hero syndrome. So everybody wants to be the hero. They always want to be the good guy. So it's like, oh, I'm saving the planet, or I'm saving the whales, or I'm saving the petroleum. It's always this, in the, with the mask. Oh, I wear the mask because I'm saving everybody around me. they play on that hero syndrome in people's psyche that it gets them to do and follow their little narratives.
That's fascinating. You got to come do this more often, because you know that ties directly into masks. I'm a good person.
Yeah.
I've been approved. I'm wearing a mask. Look at me. I'm virtue signaling. Look how wonderful I am. I'm not killing grandma, but you are. You're a bad person. You're not wearing a mask. You're not one of us. You're separate. You know, you begin to feel like a persecuted minority, you know, like a Black American in the South or a Jew in, you know, pre-Nazi Germany or, you know, early Nazi Germany. You know, because we're certainly not Holocaust
right.
level. I don't want to have anybody think that. But I'm just saying there are times when populations get demonized. You know, Armenians, Turkey. You know, before the genocide, you know, there are things that lead up to discrimination, and we are becoming a two-class society. There are the human beings, the valid human beings, those that have been, quote, fully vaccinated, and then the subhuman beings, those that actually want body integrity. So in not wanting a foreign substance in your body, the perception is that you are somehow subhuman because you're killing grandma. You're not doing your part. You're not one of us. You haven't, you're not part of the collective. You know, it's like the Borg, okay? You know, resistance is futile. That's more accurate than anything I've seen, you know, lately, you know, in terms of perception. But yeah, the hero syndrome. See, I'd never heard that before. That is fascinating. Yeah.
And that's kind of an oxymoron to me for you're less than human because you won't take the vaccine, but the vaccine literally alternates your mRNA strands, so your DNA. So to me, you're the one becoming less than human by altering your DNA, not me, but that goes back into facts and information and what we call science.
That's a fascinating revelation. As I write that down, we should probably get on to Santa Rosa Volunteers and give me an update, see what's happening there in the Arise America tour. But I just to let folks know, I had no idea we were going to talk about this. We didn't plan it. I've discovered this huge reservoir of wisdom in David, which I'm going to exploit to the fullest every chance I get. But thank you. Thank you for your observations and perceptions. I'm really glad you brought this up. But yeah, so do you have anything further you want to add at this point to the philosophical aspects of this, or would you like to go right to telling us what's happening with Santa Rosa Volunteers?
No, let's go ahead and move into SRV. So those that are involved locally know we kind of scored a big victory, or the people did, not really Santa Rosa Volunteers, but the county commission was trying to limit the people's First Amendment. They were trying to silence the people to speak during agenda items at the BOC meetings. So there was a large crowd that showed up for that yesterday morning at 8:30. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend, but they actually stood up, they voiced their opinion, and that didn't pass. So we still have a First Amendment at the county level. That was great. I appreciate everybody that showed up, and it takes people showing up, and that's kind of what we're trying to do at Santa Rosa Volunteers, is get those people activated like us and get them to show up and voice their opinions.
Yeah, that's wonderful, and that's required. That's what got rid of the mask mandate at the Milton City Council. Everybody showed up. I think it was the yellow shirts, don't mask me or whatever it was. Or what was that?
That was the very first evolution of Santa Rosa Volunteers. So when the mayor implemented her mask mandate at 4:45 on a Friday afternoon, We spent all weekend making shirts. Everybody showed up. I was literally standing at the front door handing out yellow "We Do Not Consent" shirts as everybody was walking in. If you listen to anybody talk about it, there were, you know, hundreds and thousands of people there. There was probably close to 200 people there. Not all of them were wearing the shirt, but we definitely filled the chamber, filled the hallway and out into the parking lot. It made a big impact. It got rid of the mask mandate. We're going to have to do that again tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is the Santa Rosa County School Board meeting. And with new guidance from CDC that even if you're vaccinated, you have to wear a mask again in all schools, teachers and children. So I'm sure that our leftist school board is going to try to re-implement that. So we really need to show up in force tomorrow night, which is our biggest focus right now.
Okay, where, when? You know, what should people bring? Do you have T-shirts?
Woodlawn Beach Middle School in Navarre. at 6:30 tomorrow, and I'll post that way on your page, and it can get shared out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Action Radio Group is a good place for that. And I can always, you know, put it on my own page too. Is there some kind of rule, regulation, or policy that the county commission decided they could limit free speech? I mean, you can't, obviously, First Amendment, but is there something in their rule somewhere? I mean, where did they think they had the authority to limit, you know, speech? Where did that come from?
They think they have the authority because every governing body in the area does it. The school board is the worst.
Right.
They give you 3 minutes and they have you on a timer. And if you exceed your 3 minutes by a matter of seconds and you refuse to just walk away, you know, finish your sentence, they will literally have the police walk you outside. And if you resist, they will arrest you. I've seen it happen in Santa Rosa County.
Okay, here's a way around that. I understand time limits. Congress has time limits. They have 5 minutes. But what they do is you can come back for another 5 minutes and another 5 minutes, okay? So I understand 3 minutes to get everybody in. But if you're not done with your presentation, you should be able to come back for a further one. And if they want to continue the meeting till the next week or the next night or something else, you know, to make sure everybody's heard. But everybody should be heard, and they should be able – you know, if I had to do a three-minute show, do you know how little I'd get done? I couldn't say anything in 3 minutes.
So we kind of – and they won't let you go back up there. So we kind of –
that's the problem.
We had a Santa Rosa volunteer meeting, and what we would do is we would meet the day before these board meetings and things like that. We would come up with a narrative, and we'd type it all out.
Right.
And we'd go up there. Whoever started got there first, got signed up first, would take the paper, and they would start – and it would be left there with an asterisk as to where they left off. The next person would get up there, and that narrative would continue from start to finish. And, of course, you'd have the individuals that weren't really associated with us that would get up there and talk and that kind of thing. But they had to finish hearing that thought process, and they don't like doing that. I've been thrown out of there before. There's a lot of people that have. The last one I went to, there were 13 officers, two lieutenants, a captain, a bomb dog, and two SWAT officers for a school board meeting.
For a school board meeting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Federal Department of Education has a SWAT team just for those contingencies when people actually want to speak freely. You know, it's this is a strange new world we're in. This is all the things we thought could never happen are happening, and people are still denying they're happening because they think they can't happen. I wonder what Jung would say about that. But I got a couple of ideas.
Yeah.
One, you should make videos, and we have an Action Radio video page. You're welcome to post on that. We'll get you joined up real fast. And then, but I would make videos anyway. I would, because this is the age of social media and technology. It doesn't take much to set up a phone and broadcast directly to Facebook or make a video and then post that to YouTube. I would do both, actually. And so that it's out there. And that way you're speaking to the school board. You know, this is, you know, we made this. Here's our message to the school board, or here's our message to the county board of supervisors. Post the video of exactly what you're going to say. You can still say it, of course, at the meeting. And it's good to do that because then people see the numbers. That's really what they're looking at. But if you just post the video of exactly what you want to say, and you get, you know, maybe say three speakers take, you know, 10 minutes each. Who cares? You know, it's there. Or you say, here are our main points. This is what we're going to say. And take just for people that don't have time, and get it, just take a minute to say, this is what it is. Boom, 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 boom. These are the points. Then you expand on them later on the video. And people can watch that at their leisure. But I would just make a video with your speakers of everything you want to say, post that. And then you can put it on all the local Facebook pages, all the other social media you want, Twitter, everything. And then people have access to it. You know, so the school board might not let you speak, but you've already said it in the video. It doesn't matter. It's out there. And then people can say, well, wait a minute, I heard the speech on video. And you know, school. And then people, and then urge people to write the school board based on the video that you make. That would be huge.
Yeah, that's an excellent plan. We'll definitely look into that. That's social media is something that we've got to utilize more.
Absolutely.
I'm not real good at it. I've recently got back into Facebook, but that is where everybody's at. You have to kind of dance around their their leftist policies and that kind of thing. But it's still a, still a really good tool that we've got to be able to utilize.
Well, they're not going to worry about a school board meeting, you know, but they're worried about the big picture. They're worried mostly about pushing vaccines because, and this is part of the psychosis, and I'm going to see if I can, you know, analyze a little bit about why these different organizations, you know, I know Facebook, Twitter, and Google, the exec, Zuckerberg, Dorsey, and the guy I can't pronounce, they're all heavily invested in big pharma. They are making billions off their investments. They invested billions, and they're making billions more off these huge sales. They're like nine new billionaires, you know, in the world, specifically from, you know, running a big pharma company selling vaccines. Okay, this is big business. This is one of the, you know, people don't realize this, that this not only is a marketing scam, but it's hugely profitable. It really is a racket. And the reason that they're able to do the racket is because Dr. Fascist, you know, otherwise known as Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher, which I tend to characterize him as regularly, has blocked the cures. So, you know, it'd be like if McDonald's were the only fast food thing on the market and Burger King were illegal, you know, all the other companies were illegal. Don't go there. That's poison. Can't go there. You know, we're pushing McDonald's. It's exactly the same thing. You know, they're pushing vaccines. That's it. Yeah. No treatments, no cures, you know, no immunity, nothing ahead of time. This is it. This is the, you know, all roads lead to vaccines. It's the perfect marketing campaign. So they systematically destroy the competition, which is the cure and the treatment, and push the vaccine, you know, which is supposed to come before the virus hits.
The fact that Fauci was part of the research that developed COVID and
How about that? Constantly manipulating
the SARS virus to where it's more transmissible. And I actually, for whatever reason, am drawing a blank as to the terminology for that type of research. But
gain of function?
Gain of function. There it is.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And at this point, they have so much money and they have the ability to print so much money. It's got to be for a larger purpose. It's power, manipulation, control over other humans. I don't know what kind of sick psychology really goes into why they're doing what they're doing, but yeah. It's horrific.
Yeah. I think those are all the ideas I had for you, but the videos definitely. I would also look into, and this is my thing. I'm not as big a protester or show up and speak, you know, I mean, because I do my speaking right here. But what I really like to dig into is the actual regulations. So if you find in the code, and I would ask the supervisors directly, by what code, regulation, policy, by what authority did you even think you could limit free speech? Because then we take a look at what they actually have in writing. And that's what I want to change. So if you find the actual writing in law where they think they can do what they can do, and of course if they don't have it in law, then you can just say, look, folks, you can't do this. There's no law, there's no policy, there's no regulation. And even if there is a law, policy, or regulation, we can work to change it. And so I don't think they have it. I think they're making it up, quite frankly.
I'll get that to you. They actually had a large sign posted outside the school board meetings now with the Florida statute numbers that give them the ability to do that.
Let's take a look.
That's
my ballpark.
And I brought it up to him before. So it was an individual that got up there to speak to give her 3 minutes, right? She gets up there to speak on critical race theory. Well, as soon as she starts speaking, the chairman of the meeting, Ms. Ubashire, interrupts her, tells her that that's not on the table, that's not what they're talking about, et cetera. But it doesn't matter what's on your agenda. This is public forum, and the lady has a right to speak on whatever topic she wants to speak on. So she interrupts her, which by their own definition interrupts and disrupts the flow of the meeting. So they're in violation of their own rule.
Yeah.
They don't get arrested or escorted out of the meeting. They don't get corrected. When I rewatched the video, they took about 30 to 45 seconds away from her time. Of her 3 minutes, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're dealing with 3 minutes, it's significant. As soon as the bell goes off, the individual was trying to finish their thought and was escorted out of the meeting physically by police. And we're talking about an elderly lady that stood about 3 foot tall.
And, wow.
And yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, way over share, you can mention the names of public figures, obviously, because they're public figures. But the second question is, have you ever asked the police why they're doing this? By what authority they're taking somebody out of a meeting? You know, are they arresting them? You know, are they reading Miranda rights? You know, by what authority do they escort people out of the building? And do it calmly, coolly, you know, especially if you can do it on video. That'd be even better. I don't think you're going to get that. But, you know, you can certainly write down the responses.
You get them on video. I talk to them quite often when I'm there at the meetings. I always stand in the back of the room. I never sit.
Okay.
And I'm constantly talking and building the relationship with those officers because I know at some point in the night they're going to be asked to escort me out. So it's a lot easier.
You must make friends now.
Exactly.
That's a great idea. It really is. That's wonderful. Yeah.
And they get the last one and the most honest answer, I guess, that I was ever given was, they're paying us to be here. And it's like, so your oath of office, that badge, you're not acting as a constitutional deputy sheriff at that point. You're acting as enforcer
bouncer.
For the
They're a bouncer. They're a bouncer. That's what they are. The mercenaries.
They're paying us to be here. And I'm like, well, no, actually, our tax dollars are paying you to be here. So they aren't paying you anything.
Are they making? No, wait a minute. This you might be onto something. Are they making extra money? Is the school board allocating a certain amount of money to the officers in security pay? Because officers do that all the time. They moonlight as security officers and they make extra money on top of their taxpayer money. Is there additional money?
$37.50 an hour. I pulled the public records request. Santa Rosa County School Board spent $2.1 million on law enforcement last year in the 2020 school year.
$2.1 million? Now, does that include the officers in the schools?
I didn't break that down. That is part of the school resource program, so that's not – they're getting paid their standard salary, not the off-duty salary. I believe it is still part of that number, but that one school board meeting I was mentioning earlier with all the officers and the bomb dog and SWAT members and all that, it was over $2,000 for that one school board meeting, and there were roughly 17 parents in that meeting.
Yeah. You must have like some air show going over your house right now because I'm getting a lot of background noise. It's okay. I can still hear you. It's just kind of funny. We get birds tweeting and cats meowing live radio. You never know quite what's going to happen. Whatever's in the background, people's phones go off. It's pretty funny. I'm trying to think. There's one more thing I wanted to tell you about. Well, I didn't want to do that. Anyway, you should get your contact information out too if people want to join you, if people want to find where you are, you know, websites, Facebook pages, anything you want to give, email addresses, whatever, so people can get in touch with you.
So Patriots Arise Facebook page, you can get a hold of us there in the messenger. That's also where we post a lot. You post more there than we do, I think. But that's
and I appreciate it too. You're my biggest local backer right now, so I appreciate it. So whatever I can do to help you in terms of ideas and things like that, you know, please feel free. Let me know.
Absolutely. We got the SRV1776.com is our website, and SRV1776@protonmail.com is the email. Anybody can reach us at any of those three locations. Please reach out. We can kind of point you in a direction. We've got several committees that work on different things. We got a committee that is currently working on finding a constitutional-minded sheriff to run in 2024 when our sheriff is up. We've got several that are working on county commission seats, school board seats, city council member seats. So, we've got a number of committees. We've got quite a bit of literature, so anybody interested, just reach out to us and we'll get you activated.
Yeah, you need a voter guide. What you want to do before the 2022 midterms is have a voter guide, you know, recommendations, why, you know, and the biggest thing I think we could look into is judges, because the judges never get really good descriptions in the voter guide. I talked to Tappy Villain, who is our local elections director here in Rosa County, Florida, and they just don't do it. I mean, but we can do it. You know, we can look up resumes, we can look up cases, we can even interview the judges. That might be something fun to do. Make video, things like that. I remember before when Shari Sebastiano and Shannon Rice were running for city council, we made videos of them and had great interviews. And we actually had the time to let them talk and explore, you know, what they were wanting to do on the city council. Shannon's now running for school board, which I think is fabulous. Shannon's on every Monday morning. 7 o'clock, unless she's busy doing other stuff, which happens. She's, you know, busy. Everybody is. But you're welcome to call her or talk to me, and, you know, I can always bring up questions with her too. This is fun. All right, the last thing I want to leave you with before I let you go here, and first of all, thank you very much for an excellent report. I had no idea we were going to talk about all the things we talked about. This is going to be a great record for people and something for other folks to look up. If you want to have a sign, you know, for the school board meeting, you know, I would say something like, the CDC is not a regulatory agency. So look at the power of the CDC, what they can and can't do. The only thing they can really do is stop people coming into the country who have a known, you know, disease that, you know, they actually have symptoms of. Like when Ebola was the big thing, you know, CDC could stop people from coming in. They didn't. I think Obama overrode them. But COVID, they can stop people at the border. Of course, they're not. It's funny. The one thing they can do, they're not doing at the southern border. Go ahead.
No, I was just kind of echoing your thought process there. Yeah, that's the only authority that they have, and the one that they're not exercising at all.
Well, you might want to point that out too. But the CDC is rich, is what we call a target-rich environment for signs that you can have outside and make a video. Anybody with a cell phone can do it, you know, and especially when they look rough and crazy, and interview people. So what I would do is just talk to people in line. Just walk up and down, you know, the line of the folks who are there, get their opinions, put them on camera if they want. You know, on our page, you should have your own video sections on your Facebook pages and your website. You know, have recent, actions of Santa Rosa volunteers and just date and state, you know, when and where and what you're trying to accomplish, and then show the video. You can make a record of that. And that way you build, you're going to build membership. You're going to build enthusiasm. You know, you're going to get more media coverage. Beyond me, which is good. You know, the more, the better. I don't fear competition from other media because they don't do what I do. But all these things are going to help. And so take this. You know, you got a podcast now. You'll have it about 5 minutes after nine when the show is done. That you can sort of, you know, make notes and then write down, you know, things that we talked about. And if you want to follow up, if you have more questions during the week off the air, please feel free to let me know. And let's do it again next Wednesday. This is good. This is Wednesday, right?
Sounds good.
I think so.
We'll start to you then.
I lose track of time. Thank you, David. Thank you very much for coming on the show. All right. Take care. David Jones, co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, which is becoming a very, very wonderful group of folks here. And again, they've commissioned me to create these founding moments. So I think I'll play it right now. This one's a little bit long. I think it's necessary, and what I'm finding more and more with these founding moments is that it relates incredibly to what's going on today. And it really makes the case that I didn't realize at much. The anti-federalists, I think, have a far stronger case than the federalists. And the Constitution that I used to absolutely revere and you know, think was the greatest document. It is one of the greatest documents ever created. However, there might have been a better option of redoing the Articles of Confederation, making them stronger, but not as you know, sweeping in powers as the Constitution. It gives you something to think about. Anyway, let me play this, and I'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Paper Number 3 was written by John Jay, November 3rd, 1787. Federalist John Jay again proves why he is completely ill-suited to be an advocate for the Constitution, as he continually refers to a national government instead of a federal government. He talks about how the intelligent people want a strong and efficient government, more like an aristocracy, and the more he delves into the question of why something more akin to a monarchy should exist to govern the states, who obviously can't govern themselves collectively, the more he is convinced of his own self-righteousness. It is easy to understand, if John Jay was an advocate for the Constitution, why the anti-federalists had such a target-rich environment for political ridicule and warning. So let's consider John Jay's own words as he tries to advocate for the Constitution with the theme that a strong national government is the only way to repel foreign invasions, something a bunch of colonial states had recently done to the most powerful nation on earth. Mark Levin, on one of his shows, made very clear the difference between a national government and a federal one. A national government is all top to bottom. The national government rules the nation. The national government is supreme to the states to the counties, and the counties to the cities. A federal government is something completely different. The words are not interchangeable. A federal government is where the federal government has limited powers, restrictions, and prohibitions delegated to it in a constitution. It is the states that create the federal government and therefore do the delegating of power. Those powers not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states or to the people. A federal government separates the powers, not stratifies them. Since the federal government didn't realize all this, because the Federalists, like John Jay, were more like nationalists, the 10th Amendment, the last of the Bill of Rights, was written to make it abundantly clear. To this day, one of our biggest and most important challenges is reserving those powers retained by the states and the people from an ever stronger nationalist government, which has grown way beyond the intent and language of the Constitution. One has to wonder if the Federalists did not intend this outcome all along. And now for John Jay's own words in Federalist number 3. John Jay starts this long sentence talking about how well-informed and intelligent Americans, in other words, people who agree with him, say the people of America have so long and uniformly entertained of the importance of their continuing firmly united under one federal government, vested with sufficient powers for all general and national purposes. There it is, not just united, but firmly united, and under a government vested with sufficient powers for all general and national purposes. That does not sound like a limited federal government. General and national purposes is a total government with no restrictions on power or jurisdiction. His argument that he is right is displayed in this quote: "The more attentively I consider and investigate the reasons which appear to have given birth to this opinion, the more I become convinced that they are cogent and conclusive." He is confusing being right with self-righteousness. In a reversal of Ben Franklin, who said, if you give up freedom for alleged safety, you get neither, John Jay says, among the many objects to which a wise and free people find it necessary to direct their attention, that of providing for their safety seems to be the first. One might question his arrogance that his contempt for those who don't see the world as he does, they can't be considered wise, and therefore their opinions don't matter. We have a government now mandating our safety with an experimental messenger RNA shot not approved by the FDA, but forced through a declaration of emergency, through an emergency use authorization for an alleged pandemic with a high death and injury rate from that vaccine, all for our safety. This is the logical and terrible expression of basing a government on safety instead of freedom. The essence of a free people is that we provide for our own safety, and the government protects our life, liberty, and property so we can pursue our happiness. John Jay makes it worse with the very next sentence, saying the safety of the people doubtless has relation to a great variety of circumstances and considerations, and consequently avoids great latitude to those who wish to define it precisely and comprehensively. And how exactly would a national government define our safety precisely and comprehensively? What would that government do precisely and comprehensively to ensure that safety, as they define it? That is a huge usurpation of power for the national government John Jay is advocating, and has little, if any, relationship to a limited constitutional government. The answer to that question is the history of everything done for our safety instead of our freedom, from the ratification of the Constitution up to the current COVID lockdowns, mask mandates, and complete denial of the Constitution or our rights. There is so much wrong with John Jay's government supremacist orientation that I can't cover it all in one founding moment. So let me leave you with this one paragraph of his government by the elite for the good of the people, as they see it, of course, where only good and just men will consent to serve, picked by the aristocracy to make the government efficient, which is far more preferable to a government of independent states doing whatever they want, exercising their freedom, and not considering the safety of the people. Worst of all is the raising of the specter of foreign invasion, that if we don't have a government of the best rather than the elected, we won't be safe. If we aren't fully united, we risk invasion. There is no other reality or outcome possible. Listen carefully to this last paragraph and see what you pick up. When once an efficient national government is established, the best men in the country will not only consent to serve, but also will generally be appointed to manage it, for although town or country or other contracted influence may place men in state assemblies or senates or courts of justice or executive departments, yet more general and extensive reputation for talents and other qualifications will be necessary to recommend men to offices under the national government, especially as it will have the widest field for choice and never experience that want of proper persons, which is not uncommon in some states. Hence, it will result that the administration, the political councils, and the judicial decisions of the national government will be more wise, systematical, and judicious than those of individual states, and consequently more satisfactory with respect to other nations, as well as more safe with respect to us. And now you know why we are where we are. This man never writes about elections as the people's choice or legislatures as the primary government representation of the people. John Jay went on to be the first Supreme Court Chief Justice, and elitists like him, since our founding, have gone to every corner of the then federal, but really now national government, doing everything for our safety and their prosperity while destroying our freedom. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website again is srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Well, it certainly has been an incredible show so far. David Jones, co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, is a philosopher, and it was fascinating to listen to his discussion of Carl Jung and how that applies to what's going on today. You never know what's going to happen with the people here. We have the best, brightest, most interesting, most creative, you know, most activist group right here in this community. The Milton, Pace, Pensacola, you know, this is an incredible area here in Northwest Florida, and I'm really proud and happy and feel very privileged to be here, especially coming from California, you know, which is descending into, the depths of socialist deprivation, which is really too bad. All right. The show today, the title of the show, Jab Psychosis and the Destruction of Reason, Logic, and Truth. Jab Psychosis, of course, is the vaccine. I have to do everything in code because we're living in a censorship age, you know, every bit as bad as every other censorship age whenever the leftists take over. And make no mistake, they have a lot of power right now. They don't have absolute power, obviously, because otherwise we'd all be in re-education or concentration camps. So that's the good news. The other good news is we have an election correction going on. There are audits all over the country. They're getting stronger. The evidence is getting stronger. The tide's already turned. The tide really turned as soon as Arizona decided to do an audit. That was the turning point, okay? After that, it's just a matter of a battle. And we have to wage the battle. We're going to win. We're going to win the war. We're going to win the battles. We're going to win the war. Okay, this is going to change. You know, Joe Biden will be asked, I believe, at some point within the next 6 months to leave the White House because he will no longer have 270 electoral votes. The states will rescind their consent. You know, they'll rescind their elector count. They'll change their electors to the proper electors for Trump. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens from there. That's at the point I think where Action Radio can do the most good because we already have the agenda. We, you know, have a legislative package of 22 bills that will change fundamentally our freedoms and greatly increase them and pretty much, you know, put the left in a little tiny box where they belong. All right. So what's going on here? We're in a very strange place. I've never seen anything like this. Again, this is what we thought happened to other countries. And you look at other countries and you think, well, how do the people get so propagandized? How do they do the things they did? How could they, how could our own country, you know, burn witches at the stake? How could the Inquisition happen? You know, how could the Holocaust happen? How could, the Armenian Genocide happen? I mean, I could go on. How did poison gas get used? How did nations convince millions of young men to stand on the Western Front, shoot each other and die? For 100 yards of territory back and forth for 4 years, World War I. I don't know. But there's a collective psychosis going on that allows people to depart from reality and fear. And I think fear and truth are the flip sides. Fear and truth, the yin and yang. They are the one, you know, truth can be fear and fear can be truth. You know, they are the things. And we came up with David had a brilliant perception. Talking about perception, you know, my formula that evidence plus logic plus truth, evidence plus logic plus reason equals truth. And he's saying minus perception. Okay. So you can't bring your emotions in. You can't, you know, have your judgment clouded by your fear. And so I would even add to that. So evidence plus emotions, excuse me. So start again, Greg, slow down. Evidence plus logic plus reason minus emotions and perceptions equal truth. It's getting a little complicated. Maybe we'll keep it simple, but that's where we are now. So let's start with the definition of psychosis, okay? A severe mental disorder in which thought and emotions are so impaired that contact is lost with external reality, okay? So what is the external reality, all right? And this is evidence-based logic and reason. The external reality is, you know, a virus came to the United States. Was it created in the Wuhan lab? I believe so. Can I prove it? No. Does the evidence, you know, point to it? Yes. Okay, so this virus came here early, actually late 2019. That's why it's called COVID-19, folks, okay? It's not COVID-19 because it got here in 2020. It's called COVID-19 because it got here in 2019, okay? So somewhere October, November, it arrived here. It arrived most likely in California because California has the greatest amount of flights in and out of China, all right? So that makes sense. And the irony, the ultimate irony of COVID, if you remember the early stages of COVID, all right, New York was far worse because New York locked down first. California didn't lock down. They were actually building herd immunity naturally, the old-fashioned way, the real way, counter to what the WHO did, the World Health Organization, when they changed the definition. Okay, they said that the herd immunity is based on the vaccination rate. No, that's BS. They just made that up. That's an imperception. That's a fear. That's a marketing technique. Okay, because they make money off this. Everybody does. You know, the WHO makes money. China makes money. You know, in fact, the WHO, I have an article that the WHO went to China in 2014 and said, let's build up your vaccination business. Okay. Gee, what a surprise. You know, and then 2015, you know, the French set up the Wuhan lab, you know, and then the French warned the Obama administration, hey, guess what? They're doing gain of function research here. And the Obama administration said, great, you know, we'll ban it in the United States, but we'll let it go on there because they were creating a virus, you know, to get rid of Trump later on. They didn't know Trump was going to be there, but they knew that this virus would come in handy sometime. All right. So this is what's going on. So all this stuff is happening. And so the virus gets here in 2019, and it affects, you know, a few people at first. The other reality that I'm convinced of, that's an interesting point. You know, if you can't prove it, absolutely, is it real? Well, I guess that's a realm of speculation. But it looks to me, from all my evidence, that Dr. Fascist, you know, who knew SARS-CoV-1 could be cured by COVID, by chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine, also knew that SARS-CoV-2 could be cured by hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So if they knew that, they had a cure. So if something went terribly wrong, if all their plans went wrong, if the gain of function went wrong and this virus were released all over the world like it was, they still had a cure for themselves. They just had to demonize it and ban it for everybody else. Okay, for the same reason that Gavin Newsom dines at the French Laundry, but Californians can't go out to a regular restaurant, unless they wear a mask, and even then they're locked down. That's the difference. You know, okay for me, but not for thee. So that's how this stuff works. So the psychosis is a severe mental disorder in which thought and emotions are so impaired that contact is lost with external reality. Okay, that's where fear comes in. So fear becomes the marketing tool. So the virus came here and it started to spread. And the normal course of a virus, a new virus, is that it's going to, you know, greatly accelerate in the first, you know, month or two, and it's going to greatly decelerate and disappear in the next month or two. You know, 8 to 10 weeks, I think, is the kind of the accepted number for the normal course of a virus. What it is in the flu, you know, there's other viruses, all right? So they rise up because nobody has immunity yet, right? So, you know, certain people have natural immunity. So all the people with natural immunity, they don't get it. So that's why it's, the spread is limited immediately by those that are naturally immune to it anyway, probably those that had SARS-CoV-1, okay? So then, but the vulnerable do get it. And they, you know, usually folks that are older, comorbidities, they're on the short side of life anyway. And, you know, God bless them. I hope they had a good life, but everybody gets caught by something sometime. And so then the question is, so the most vulnerable die. That's just a reality, all right? And so the peak was April 15th. And then as I saw the CDC charts and I had to document it, I got the screenshots, you know, it was heading down to zero as of July 4th of 2020. And so it was about 300 deaths that week. And then it was, you know, on its way. The trend was from April 15th, you know, through July 4th to zero. That's where it was going. Now, would it ever get to zero? Probably not, because there's always some people that are vulnerable. But is it a pandemic? No. So what happened was, you know, sometime in early July, the CDC changed the numbers. They changed the indices. They've been caught doing this. I got articles on that too, right? So the CDC changed the numbers because they want to create fear. They bring in lockdowns. Okay. They bring in mask mandates. You know, they create an irrational fear of something that was already on its way out, that people were either immune to naturally or they built up natural immunity through getting it. See, everybody's already been exposed to COVID, all right? You have to understand that. Everybody's already been exposed, and that was brought out by a vaccine professional researcher, you know, person from a Japanese firm who used to be an American public health official. Now works for a Japanese company. Congress was briefed on that. I know I got a special one where Republicans were briefed on it. Everybody gets exposed. Well, if everybody gets exposed, okay, then the idea that masking and locking down are going to do anything is ludicrous. Because the science says that everybody gets exposed. Masks don't block viruses unless they're specifically, you know, for that purpose and they're worn for a short time. Okay, those paper masks, you read the instructions. You know, it blocks, you know, I guess certain germs, bacteria, pollen, allergens. You know, but viruses are conspicuously absent from the things it blocks. Why? Because they're tiny. They're hard to block. All right. So that's that. So the reality is this is a virus. It has a normal course. It goes up. It goes down. You know, the most vulnerable are going to die. Most people are going to either get it, not know it, not get it, not know it. You know, you can't, if you never have symptoms, you can't tell whether you got it and got over it or you had natural immunity in the first place. But that's the vast majority of the population. Okay. So the vast majority of people, you know, either were immune or got immune. Okay. That's the reality. And the fact that they don't test for immunity before giving a vaccine proves that this is a marketing tool, proves that this is a product. This is not a necessity. This is not an emergency. If it were an emergency, they'd test people and only get the most vulnerable people first. They don't do that. They want everybody to take it. They want babies to take it pretty soon. We're not testing babies yet, but, you know, who's to say that, that in an operating room or a room, you know, where a woman's giving birth, there won't be a couple of people there. You know, the OBS, the obstetrician, you know, helping with the birth and after with a COVID vaccine. You don't know? Well, it's more efficient. Let's just do it at birth and get it over with. Yeah. And this is how they think in certain areas. So the psychosis is the irrational fear. The psychosis that brings people away from reality is that this is just a regular virus. Well, it's a man-made virus like other man-made viruses. It is dangerous to those that are vulnerable and is not dangerous to those that are not vulnerable. It just so happens that 99.7% of the population is not vulnerable. Well, it's hard to have a pandemic with, you know, 0.3% of the population, you know, and of those, you know, most of those are going to be okay with treatment. Okay. So the reality is this is treatable. This is preventable. This, you have an immune system. That's the reality. Okay. But the perception is the only way out of this is with a vaccine. Okay. So the psychosis is blocking every you know, treatment and cure that you know, or at least, you know, that if you don't know which treatments and cures work, you know that there are always treatments and cures for disease, always. Okay. Whether, you know, it's effective or not is debatable. You know, some things are effective, some things aren't. You know, does chicken soup cure a cold? Well, actually, there's evidence it does. Whatever it is, you know, and I don't know if it's the canned variety, but there's something in chicken soup that actually has an antiviral property. This is scientifically based. You know, so when your Jewish mother gave you chicken soup, and you don't even have to be Jewish, but, you know, or grandmother, you know, hey, well, try this. It's good. Okay, you want the chicken soup? You got the chicken soup. You have a cold? You got a cold. Okay, fine, sit down. It's my tribute to Jackie Mason. Yeah, it works. Okay, come on. Hey, sit down. Have the chicken soup. You'll be fine. Yeah, wait a little while. Okay, fine. Anyway, but it's true. You know, so home remedies work. Chinese medicine is based on herbs. Okay. This is why Big Pharma hates Chinese medicine. It's fascinating to go through San Francisco. You know, I used to live there and I would go through Chinatown all the time. And in fact, I talked to a Chinese medicine pharmacist. You know, he showed me all the drawers of the different herbs and things. And, you know, and he'd have these Chinese prescriptions, you know, from the Chinese doctors who prescribed Chinese herbs. And that was the pharmacy. You know, so you go to an American pharmacy, you get all these drugs and pills and little plastic bottles and, you know, all that stuff they measure out with their little spatulas and tray and counting tables and things like that. And this guy had drawers full of, you know, herby things, you know, plants and this and that. And some looked weird and some looked strange and some were roots and some were, you know, bark and some were plants and some were leaves and some were teas. And, you know, that was a Chinese pharmacist. Okay. You know, folks, this is 7,000 years old medicine and it works. Okay. But Big Pharma doesn't want you to take Chinese medicine because they can't market it, patent it, and you know, make a huge profit off it. They can with brand new vaccines. That's why brand new vaccines. How come there isn't an old vaccine? Call me crazy, you know. But why didn't, you know, why didn't they? I guess they tried one with SARS-CoV-1. It didn't work. So now they're trying one now. But this time, you see, so the SARS-CoV-1 virus didn't work. Okay, oh wait a minute, I think I might be onto something here. So the SARS-CoV-1 virus didn't work. All right. So there's no point in getting, you know, waiting 10 years to test it. A, the virus would be gone. And B, it, you know, wasn't necessary anyway. Okay. So SARS-CoV-2, they invent SARS-CoV-2. They don't have the 10-year waiting period, the normal approval period for a vaccine. They don't bother with that. They create an artificial pandemic and tell that you have to take it now. This is the only way out. And they get a declaration of emergency from Trump. Idiot. You know, then they use emergency use authorizations, you know, to get you the vaccine right now before you realize that the virus is already gone. This is the psychosis. The psychosis is that you believe anything you're told. Okay. And the problem is, you know, and I'm not sure why it was, but I want you to think back for a little bit. I'm going to change this around a little bit. I actually have some notes here for today, which I did before the show. I want you to think back to December 2019 or just 2019 in general. Remember when you were happy? When you never heard of COVID, you went about your day, you went outside, you went to the beach, you had fun, you saw friends, you saw family, you went to church, you went to the store, you know, you went to your job, and you had normal problems, you know, there, you know, traffic, you know, your boss is a jerk, normal problems, right? You know, you're getting tired of being married. I get tired really early. But you have normal problems that we all deal with all the time. But 2019 was a happy year, pretty much. You know, it was Trump. The economy was booming. You know, China was on the run. NATO was paying their fair share. The wall was being built. We had energy. You know, this was a good time. 2019 was a great year. Okay. We were optimistic. We were happy. We were proud to be American again. You know, except for the left. That's never happy when we are. You know, the left is miserable when the country is happy, and the left is happy when the country is miserable. They're really happy right now. All the rest of us are miserable. Everything that Trump did right has been reversed to make the left happy. And they're such a small minority, it's kind of crazy for that. But anyway, so happy in 2019. Well, the left couldn't stand that. You know, they couldn't stand Trump. They couldn't stand a good economy. They couldn't stand us having all the energy we wanted at a low price. They couldn't stand the border wall going up. They couldn't stand any of the things that were good. So they had to change that. All right. So this virus that they engineered with gain-of-function research and these vaccines that they made, I'm sure, years ago, that's the other reality. Moderna was formed in 2010. What do you think they did the last 10 years? Sit on their butts and do nothing? No, they were creating vaccines, messenger RNA vaccines, okay? Well, this is why I said the vaccine came before the virus. The virus was created to match the vaccine. Hello? Haven't you been following the show? Okay. But you can't. But if you've got the psychosis, you don't see that, okay? So if you've got the psychosis, you know, you do what David talked about and what I think Shelby's talked about and other people in the show have talked about. You get the mindless repetition of the same thing. Okay, you get the mindless repetition. That, you know, and in fact, you can see it on the Facebook page. Facebook keeps repeating this like mantras. You know, on every time you put the word, you know, vaccine, vax, jab, shot, you know, COVID, you know, virus, China virus, woohoo, flu, any of those things, they put a notice. And the first notice was, you know, vaccines are safe and effective. Vaccines have been clinically tested. And then they said the other thing, you know, for more vaccine info, go here. And then they said vaccines are closely monitored for safety. Well, that's nice. I'm glad they're close. But these little mantras that you ingest into your brain, and they become part of the psychosis. You know, vaccinated people, good. You know, body integrity people, bad. But they don't say body integrity. They say unvaccinated. Okay. They make up this whole category. If you're unvaccinated, you're not one of us. Okay. We need to fear you because you can kill grandma. You know, even if you don't have any symptoms. That's totally irrational. It's all been proven wrong. Okay. Asymptomatic transfer doesn't work except in the most extreme rare of cases. I mean, nothing's impossible, but it's damn close to it. Okay. So we know the truth. We know the things. We've been on them on the show. But what I'm talking about is the psychosis. You know, what is it about people that they're so willing to believe something that is absurd on its face? Okay. That if you don't have symptoms of a disease, you have the disease. Well, then how does the disease manifest itself? If you don't have symptoms, you know, I mean, oh yeah, you can have cancer, you know, things like that and not feel it yet. Okay. I understand that. All right. But what I'm saying is, you know, if you may have a cold virus, but if you don't have symptoms of a cold, you know, the runny nose, the sniffles, the sneezes, the, you know, the headache, the you know, the coughs, all that kind of stuff, you know, do you have a cold? Is it affecting you? Well, the answer is no. You know, with viruses, and I'm not a virologist, but neither is Dr. Frasius, so that's okay. You know, with the trillions of viruses that are circulating through the globe constantly, that we're all getting in our system, that our body fights off quite well, except for occasionally when one gets through and, you know, gets to us, your body takes care of that stuff. You know, it's automatic. You know, you've got an automatic pilot, you know, watching out for all these different viruses. Why was this one the one that was singled out as the most dangerous? When in reality, it's not. The reality is, you know, 99.999% recovery if you're under 19. Well, I don't even call it recovery. I call it, you're not even going to notice it. Okay. So the recovery survivable non-notice rate is so ridiculously high. Why is this thing even dangerous? You know, why do they talk about flu bugs? You know, the flu disappeared, and that's why they switched the CDC test, okay? So the perception is that flu is gone, and this is here. Well, how did that happen, okay? Why are people so willing to believe things that on their surface, on their face, make no sense? Why are people willing to believe that there is no cure, there is no treatment, you have to wait until you're so sick, you have to be on a ventilator in the hospital, and then it's too late? But the only way out of that is with a vaccine. Why are people so willing to believe that? People are willing to believe anything. They're willing to believe in climate change, which is crazy. They're willing to believe just amazingly stupid things. Where is this human need to believe something? You know, I think it was the British philosopher, if I can, you know, wax philosophical here, Chichester, E.K. Chichester, whatever, you know, whatever his name was. Anyway, he said the danger, and this is what I'm talking about, a belief in God. He says the danger of people, you know, not believing in God is not that they will believe in nothing, is that they'll believe in anything. And this is where I think a lot of this climate change comes from. That's why you'll see that the most ardent believers in big government and forcing vaccinations are people that don't have religion. They don't have God. Well, I wouldn't say religion, but they don't have God. They don't have a higher power. Okay. So if you don't have a higher power in your life, then the last resort, the last reservoir of knowledge is you. And if your reservoir of knowledge is fear and irrationality, that leads to psychosis. And so you're willing to believe anything because you don't have a base to believe that there's a higher power, you know, that kind of set all this stuff up and that there are rules. All right. Viruses have rules, just like we have rules. Rules for humans. We only live so long. You know, rules for viruses, you know, they will attack people that are vulnerable and they can't touch people that aren't. Those are the rules. All right. But if you believe in but if you're affected by the psychosis and the marketing plan to sell you on vaccines, you'll believe anything. So you know, in many ways, it's kind of strange to say that, for me to say this, but a lot of the cure for the psychosis is to believe that there's a higher power, that there's actually an order to the universe, that there's a structure to this, you know, from subatomic nuclear particles to, you know, red giant stars, you know, to the whole universe or multiple universes. There is an order to this. There's a glue that holds the universe together, you know, for lack of a better word, God. Okay, that's how this works, all right? The force that binds all of us and creates these rules and created a system where the DNA of a tulip and a human being is 40% similar, okay? I read that way back when. You know, so what are the chances of that happening? You know, by accident. Monumentally impossible. And yet people believe that, you know, all these accidents just kind of happen. And that's the thing. What do you believe? What is your perception? Where do you go for your beliefs? I go to, you know, to evidence, logic, and reason. That's where I go. Okay. I do believe in a higher power. I don't think the universe is an accident. I do think there are rules that were set up for how things work. Are they fair all the time? No. Do the rules protect everybody? No. You know, part of the way the system works is that nobody lasts forever. So you got to do what you can while you're here. Make your impact. Do your work. Don't be stupid. Don't waste your time. Do stuff. Take chances. That's the condition that we are in. That's the reality. Okay. So you got to use your perception. Well, and then David said, you know, perceptions are part of the problem. I got to reason that through. I got to, you know, check that out. It's an interesting thought. But that's where we are. So December 2019 was the last month we were really happy. Things were great. We had Christmas. We had New Year's. It was wonderful. January, we found out about COVID, and life hasn't been the same since. So get rid of your fear. Get rid of your psychosis. Look at the world as it actually is. Look at the physical rules, the properties of viruses, the effectiveness of vaccines, the contamination of your body from messenger RNA shots. You know, look at it objectively, and you will find the truth. Right? And it's not in the marketing campaign. That's the problem. So what's motivating these people? Is it just power for government? Is it just money for big pharma and big government health? I don't know. I really don't. But it is interesting. All right. Let me see what I can give you here. Let me play my PSA. And let's see what else we got here. I don't really have a – I'll play this for now. I'll be back. To call any show on the Action Radio Network from anywhere in the United States, the number is 215-383-3832. To call any show from outside the United States using Skype, call 011, then 1-215-383-3832. We have many groups within Action Radio which will become laboratories for citizen legislation and serve as a place you can go for more specialized information. From the main Facebook page, Action Radio with Greg Penglis, at facebook.com/radiolegislature, you can check out our Action Radio News Group, our Vaccine Project, the Family Law Project, the Art Project, the Writers Page, the Video Page, our new Student Advocacy Group, and many more groups that are coming soon. Remember, at Action Radio, we don't report the news, we are the news. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. Where's that come from? All right, I'll give you a second to think about it. That's a quote from the Manchurian Candidate, the real one, you know, not the one that that you heard, you know, the Denzel Washington. It's a good movie, but it's got nothing to do with the real one. Okay. There's an article here I found, Jim Carroll's blog, and I'm not sure who Jim Carroll is, but I think I'd like to get him on the show. This is from July 20th of 2017, so back when we were happy, back before COVID. So this article is written before anybody knew about COVID. You know, this is why it's so fascinating. In order to sell the product, which is vaccines, you have to have a marketing campaign. Well, how effective are marketing campaigns? And is the marketing campaign, in a way, a huge contributor to the psychosis? I believe it is. So I found this article, which I want to go through. There's two really good articles, and we'll get to the one on the election correction. Today is sort of like I said, there's no real schedule for Wednesdays. It's sort of a very fluid thing going back and forth between vaccination stuff and election stuff. So I got plenty of things posted on my Facebook page and on, and you can get the Action Radio group. So the articles are there. The group is public. My page is not. All right. So the article I found here, Jim Carroll's blog, there was a movie called The Manchurian Candidate. Still, I think one of the finest films ever made. Frank Sinatra, Lawrence Harvey, Angela Lansbury, a couple of other folks. And so you've got to watch this film. It's black and white. It's called a political thriller, but a lot of it concerns brainwashing. Okay. It concerns government, you know, telling you what to do, what to think. And the power of this is quite fascinating and how extreme it can get. All right. So let me just read to the article. And in fact, it centers around a, I think either a sergeant or a lieutenant in an army platoon in the Korean War. And what happened was they were this platoon was captured, and they were sent to China for brainwashing. All right, and they actually created an assassin out of Raymond Shaw. And but he doesn't know he's doing it. He has no memory or recollection that he's killing people. It's quite fascinating. This is one of, like I say, it's one of the best political thriller, psychological thrillers I've ever seen. And what is fascinating about it is the way they talk about brainwashing and there's a lot of humor. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. But for the other members of the platoon, of which Frank Sinatra was one, he was Sergeant Marco. Whenever anybody asks one of the members of the platoon what they think of Raymond Shaw, they always repeat this mantra: Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. You know, vaccines are safe and effective. They've been thoroughly tested. They're monitored closely. What's the difference? Okay. What is the difference between Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life, and vaccines are proven safe and effective. They're monitored closely. And, you know, they're thoroughly tested. I don't know. I think they're the same to me. Because you repeat something often enough, you know, from the radio executives I've talked to, you know, advertising, the secret of advertising is repetition. You know, it's not that the message is that great. It's repetition. It gets into your head. You know, there was a famous experiment done in, I think it was Chicago, they did this. You know, they were having a spelling, test. And they asked the kids, you know, one of the words was relief. Well, how do you spell relief? And the kids all wrote R-O-L-A-I-D-S. That's how they spelled it, because that's what they'd heard. Rolaid spells relief. And so they were so channeled and so directed that that's what they did. That's what they wrote for their spelling test. That made national news. All right. Anyway, let me get to the article here. The 1962 movie, The Manchurian Candidate. This is where I need Tina Terry. Tina's been on the show. She's our movie reviewer. So I'll have to send this to her and say, Tina. I didn't know. I just found this morning. I didn't have a chance to talk to her ahead of time. The 1962 movie, The Manchurian Candidate, is a taut thriller and dark political satire that begins with communist brainwashing and culminates in an assassination attempt of a presidential candidate. Lawrence Harvey plays Raymond Shaw, a U.S. Army sergeant who has been awarded the Medal of Honor for saving the lives of 9 members of his battalion that were being held behind enemy lines in Korea. Major Ben Marco, played by Frank Sinatra, is one of the survivors. He is cursed by a recurrent nightmare in which Shaw kills 2 members of their squad. He is further confused by the fact that any mention of Shaw's name leads him to repeat the exact same sentence. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. And they do. They repeat it in a monotone in the film. It's fascinating. Article says, Marco gradually realizes that he is a victim of brainwashing. He sets out to understand why and to foil the plot that lies behind it. And yeah, that's what we're kind of doing here with COVID. If you look at it the same way, we're trying to counter your brainwashing. Your brainwashing is... Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. You know, COVID shots are safe and effective, tested and monitored closely. It's the same thing. It's your mantra. All right. Anyway, one of the famous quotes from the doctor, I forgot what his name is, Pavlov Institute. This is where they do their brainwashing in China. The Pavlov, you know, this is what they name it, the Pavlov Institute. All right, you know, Pavlov's dogs, Pavlov's response. Okay. So Dr., you know, I forgot what his name is, you know, Pavlov Institute. And he's a Russian counterpart. And this is the Chinese guy running the thing. And it's funny, there was said Chinese brainwashing. Okay. And where's COVID from? Wuhan, China, developed by, you know, American propagandists and, you know, Dr. Fascist and the whole crew, you know, big government pharma. Same thing. Back to the article. Oh, anyway, so Dr. forgotten what his name, you know, of the Pavlov Institute in China said his brain has been washed, as they say. It has been dry cleaned. Okay, so let's get back to our author here. Let's get back to Jim Carroll, who's in advertising. And this is why I think this is fascinating to study advertising as to how the COVID message is creating psychosis. That's my basic thesis for today, okay? He says, I began my career as a qualitative market researcher. I was doing some work for the automotive brand Peugeot, whose slogan at the time was, the lion goes from strength to strength. Peugeot's badge features a heraldic lion. I guess that'd be heraldry. I don't know how I pronounce that right. Anyway, he says, one respondent wanted to impress on me that he ignored all advertising. It completely passed him by. He was an entirely rational individual. Yeah, right. Later in the discussion, I asked him how Peugeot was performing in the competitive context. He said, they've been doing pretty well. To be fair, they've been going from strength to strength. So he actually repeats the ad. The ad slogan. It's fascinating. I mean, you know, you can do this with anything. You know, how pure is ivory soap? Come on, folks. How pure is ivory soap? 99 to 44 100%. Okay, you knew that, right? So what's another big slogan out there? I mean, I tend to think of more slogans from my childhood. You know, I'd like to teach the world to sing, the Coke ad. Coca-Cola, folks. You know, and it's fascinating that these are the things that stick with me. So I wonder if advertising has far more impact on kids, and that's why they're trying to, you know, get the kids all vaccinated, and why they want the kids to defy their parents and get vaccinated even if the parents don't want them to, which is not only child abuse, but, you know, potentially life-endangering. It violates the basic principle that parents are in charge of their kids. Okay. But kids are more easily influenced. I mean, think of the ads that you remember, you know, and some of the best ad, you know, some of the ads are really clever. The best ad, I'm digressing here, but the best ad that I remember in recent history, and it was a few years ago, was the Volvo ad. The Volvo ad quoting a Walt Whitman poem. So you have this rugged individualist guy, you know, he's out there in the cold and the wind, and he's got his Volvo, and there's a fox staring at him and the whole bit. And then they read the Walt Whitman poem. You know, the north and the south are mine, the east and the west are mine, the trails are open to, you know, it's talking about walking across America, but he's driving his Volvo. But it is like, you know, man stuff, okay? It is like, yeah, I identify with that. Yeah, I'm that rugged individual. Gee, maybe I should get a Volvo and race around the country, you know, in a highly expensive imported automobile. Might be fun. But the point is, I remember it. Okay, why? Because it talks to me about something that advertising has lost, which is the fact that most men are treated like idiots. Okay, and how many ads have you seen where it's always, especially the white guy, the white father's an idiot, you know, even, you know, but every other father, well, actually, no, most fathers are treated like idiots in commercials. White fathers are treated, you know, supremely idiots. And that's how it works, okay? That's the demonization of guys. Now, how many guys internalize that? How many guys internalize that, you know, they've seen these messages for years that they're toxically masculine, you know, that they're evil by being, you know, male. And now it's even worse if you're white. You know, so critical race theory teaches that white people are evil. You know, men are evil. Therefore, white men are the most evil. Okay, how many have internalized that? And whatever excuse they have for whatever they're not doing, well, you know, I'm an oppressor, so it's okay. I don't, you know, I should let everybody else take the job. I won't go for it because I'm an oppressor. You know, I want to correct the wrongs of times before. Okay, I mean, that's out there. I know it's out there. You know, young guys, we got to talk to you. Okay, we got to get you to literally man up. Okay, and we'll work on that. I was a big men's rights supporter and fan back in the 80s. You know, Iron John, Robert Bly. Okay. For those that know what I'm talking about, you know, you understand. All right. So back to this rather fascinating column. He says, I was subsequently researching Red Rock Cider, which had a tagline about being less gassy with no strong aftertaste. Well, that's a bad slogan, all right? So I wonder if well, let me finish this. This is a blog in one of my groups turned to some respondents that were skeptical of the cider's merits and said, you know, you should try Red Rock. It's less gassy than the other ciders, and it's got no strong aftertaste. So he exactly parroted the line, okay? Now, here's something in psychology that I learned about advertising, that the message, the words are so critical. You know, Bud Light, an advertiser told me this one day. He says that Bud Light used to say fewer calories, okay? Fewer calories, you know, Bud Light, buy it because it's fewer calories. And that wasn't selling. So then some genius came up with the idea of saying less filling. Well, that worked. That's why they're still saying it. Guys don't want to think fewer calories because guys are macho. They don't want to believe that, you know, you're going to get guys to drink Bud Light. How are you going to do it? Well, you're going to tell them, you don't tell them it has fewer calories because that's like chick stuff, okay? You tell guys that it's less filling. Now it's okay. Now it's acceptable. So ask any guy why they, well, we should try that. You know, anybody that drinks Bud Light, first of all, God help you. Secondly, if you do ask them, well, why do you like Bud Light? Well, you know, it tastes great and it's less filling. Oh, okay. There's their advertising. You know, that's the marketing. You know, why are you taking the COVID vaccine? Well, it's proven safe and effective. And, you know, they it's been thoroughly tested and they monitor it closely. You know, these are the mantras of COVID. The parallels are unmistakable. Anybody wants to call me, I mean, feel free. We've only got it. You know, we're, 36 minutes left here, but this has been, I'm just rambling. Don't mind me. Do you see the parallels? Do you see what I'm talking about? Anyway, 215-383-3832. Let me go back to this rather amazing article. Then I got another article to do in the last half hour. Okay. So back to Red Rock Cider, which I've never heard of, but I'll know it now. It's less gassy than the other ciders. What do you mean? You don't burp as much? I mean, what's a better way to say that? Bloated. No, that's Beano or whatever that stuff is. We need, you know, and no strong aftertaste. That doesn't even sound good anyway. You know, I would say tastes great long after, you know, your last gulp or last sip or something like that. That'd be a better expression. Less gassy? Oh, come on, folks. We can do better than that. We can think of an advertising slogan. Quieter. It's quieter in your system and tastes great long afterwards. Yeah, so I can make up advertising too. Okay. Anyway, so back to the article, which is, you know, there's a point to all this, but it's just in another research, what we're doing is showing you that the psychosis can be easily channeled, that you're a lot more easily brainwashed than you think you are. You know, it's like the old shampoo, my favorite example, you know, wash, rinse, and repeat. Well, how many years did you wash, rinse, and repeat before you realized you didn't have to repeat? But it says so in the directions, so you did. Okay. You know, directions are another thing too. All right. Back to the article. In another research project, I was talking to some kids about breakfast cereal, and I mentioned the Honey Nut Loops brand. I don't know what Honey Nut Loops are, but that's okay. It's probably good. He says, in unison, they probably launched into an uncanny rendition of the Honey Nut Loops theme tune, Honey Nut Loops, Let's Loop Together. I don't know what the Honey Nut Loops team is. I don't know, but anyway, there it is. All right. So, I mean, do you remember the movie Demolition Man? This is another great example, all right? You know, they Benjamin Bratt and Brant? It's not Bratt. Is it Bratt? Anyway, who knows? And who's my favorite actress? I forgot what her name. Anyway, she's in Demolition Man. Sylvester Stallone, Sandra Bullock. There we go. Sandra Bullock, Sylvester Stallone, the guy from that did the comedian. No, I'll think of him. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is, Benjamin Bratt and I forgot her name again. Susan Bullock, Sandra Bullock. We're singing commercials. This is in the future. The movie Demolition Man is set in the future. It's a great film. You have to see it because they start singing, you know, the I Want to Be an Oscar Mayer Wiener song, and they start singing Kennel Ration Dog Food, and these commercials have actually become hit songs. And so in the future, the commercials, the marketing is so strong that they add, and this is a great, you know, this movie is amazing perception in the future, where commercials actually become songs, and that may happen one day. That your favorite commercial theme song might actually become, you know, on the Billboard charts. That's a scary thought. But anyway, that's what Demolition Man talks about. That's why you need to see these two films. You need to see Demolition Man, besides the fact that Wesley Snipes is fabulous in it, and so is Sylvester Stallone and the other folks too. But you need to see it for all the futuristic things when they talk about the franchise wars. And the only restaurant left is Taco Bell. It's a scary look into the future. All right, so. Back to the article. He says, I confess I retain an affection for jingles, slogans, and catchphrases. We may prefer nowadays to talk of symbols, rhythms, patterns, and memes, that'd be social media. Whatever the terminology, repetition gives consumers a sense of a brand's conviction and consistency. So there we go. Same thing I heard from the radio executives. Okay, I know a few, you know, high up people in radio world because I've been able to talk to some amazing folks, including a media analyst and anyway, I won't give you the details, but I know people. I'm in radio, all right? And they said the same thing, repetition. Repetition is the key to getting a message in. It's the big lie. It's Joseph Goebbels from Nazi Germany. If you repeat a lie, if you have a big enough lie and you repeat it often enough, people will believe it, even though there's no reason to believe it because it's the big lie, all right? Vaccines are safe and effective. They've been tested thoroughly, and they're monitored closely. Raymond Shaw. Is the kindest, gentlest, warmest human being I've ever met in my life. You know, what else? I wish I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener. All right, back to the ad. He says, I confess I retain it. Oh, yeah, he says, Jim, you know, whatever the terminology, repetition gives consumers a sense of a brand's conviction and consistency, a handy vocabulary that explains its distinctiveness. And yes, at their best, these devices do indeed possess a certain hypnotic power. Within the communication industry, we have always denied that we were engaged in anything so sinister as brainwashing, but not everyone has agreed with us. In 1957, just a few years before The Manchurian Candidate hit the cinemas, Vance Packard published The Hidden Persuaders. The book sought to alert the American public to the use by advertisers of applied psychology and sociology, and to the employment of motivational research, I guess they call it market research now, motivational research to determine consumers' psychological weaknesses. Packard suggested that brands were engaged in mass persuasion through the subconscious. I think he's absolutely right. Here's a quote. Many of us are being influenced and manipulated for more than we realize in the patterns of our everyday lives. There you go. Article continues. As my own experiences illustrate, we cannot deny that many of consumers' opinions of and associations with brands are formed at the subconscious level. We may nowadays call it low involvement processing, but there's still an ethical question to be answered. Does advertising brainwash its consumers? I would say absolutely. You know, and that's the whole point. You know, I would say that COVID marketing has brainwashed the, you know, most of the public. You know, David talked about the same thing that other people have talked about, the mindless repetition of the talking points. Are talking points themselves brainwashing? I would say yes. I didn't think about that till just now. But why would you have talking points? Are talking points not little lies that contribute to a bigger lie? COVID vaccines are safe and effective. They've been tested thoroughly. We monitor them closely. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, gentlest, warmest human being I've ever met in my life. Ivory soap is 99.44% pure. Wash, rinse, and I could do this all day. Wish I were an Oscar, my wiener. Okay, you know, come on my show and sing a jingle. What's your favorite ad? What ads? You know, when I say what ad sticks out in your mind, you know. I'm Cocoa for Cocoa Pops. Okay, and I hated chocolate cereal. Okay, it's all there. It's all there in your brain. Trust me, brainwashing. There, can't help it. Within the industry, we have consistently contended that the answer to brainwashing is no. Whilst, this is a British article, I think, whilst Packard suggested advertising works in a covert or clandestine way, we sustain that its persuasive powers hide in plain sight. Moreover, consumers are largely complicit in advertising's seductive self. Most are willing participants in the marketing game. In The Hidden Persuaders, even Packard conceded, here's a quote, when irrational acts are committed knowingly, they become a sort of delicious luxury. I have no idea what that means. I'm going to read that again. When irrational acts are committed knowingly, they become a sort of delicious luxury. How much have the luxury for irrational? Oh, I see. I think about that. So the irrational, what are the irrational acts? You know, I mean, I don't know, getting a vaccine for a virus that's gone, not being tested for immunity before you get the vaccine, you know, wearing a mask that doesn't have viruses as a preventive on the cover, locking down your business for no reason when no other, you know, disease pandemic has done the same thing, believing that it's going to work. The longer you're locked down, the worse your business gets, the more the COVID increases. You know, and if it worked, if it didn't work the first time, it's going to not work just as well the next time. You know, the insanity of all this is fascinating, but it is brainwashing. I absolutely believe that the success of the vaccination program, the marketing campaign, is dependent on brainwashing. Okay, so think about that next time Biden gets up and says, "If you don't take the vaccine, you're an idiot." You know, we're going to come knocking on your door and tell you you're an idiot. Okay. While we're there, we're going to get your voter registration, your address. You know, we're going to get to, you know, we do all kinds of things. Oh, by the way, when you get the shot, we're going to go into a massive database. This is going to be great. Your DNA is going to be altered, and you can't do anything about it because you think you're being cured of COVID, which you're probably immune to anyway by now. Wow. He says, I should say, goes back to the article, almost done. I should say that in my many years of attending focus groups, creative reviews, and client meetings, I rarely came across anyone so serious as a professional hypnotist, motivational researcher, or a psychologist. We did dabble in a little harmless semiotics. I'm not sure what semiotics is. I'll have to look that up. But we generally regarded persuasion as an art, not a science. Well, I think it's both. Okay. We sought to charm and entice rather than to deceive. Yeah, you deceived yourself there, pal. Think about that. Is advertising, is persuasion an art, a science, or both? I would say both. The ads are works of art. The psychology to brainwash you is works of science. Think about that. Last paragraph. Perhaps this is why today's acolytes of marketing neuroscience, marketing neuroscience, there's a term for you, makes me a little uncomfortable. We often assert that attention in the modern era must be earned, not hijacked. Yet neuroscience seems to take us back in the opposite direction. Talk of brain scans and emotional manipulation, of eye tracking and facial coding, of unconscious desires and subconscious triggers would have resonated with Packard. We shouldn't be complacent about such things. Perhaps it's time to dust off our copies of The Hidden Persuaders. He says, I fell into a trance just watching you dance. My world just stopped when I saw your eyes on me. Hypnotized. I'm hypnotized. There we go. That's from the Undertones, Hypnotized, Charles Burchill, James Kerr. I should get that song. Anyway, that's a fascinating article. Absolutely fascinating. All right, we're gonna totally move into something completely different. And let me see what else I can play for you here. This is quick. Let me no, I don't do that one. No, I got too many things here. What haven't I done for a while? Let me play something on Milton. I'll be right back. Let's do this one. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio, for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoop's Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen. This is where I realized I turned my mic off. I'll be right back. Action Radio. Dangerously cool. All right. So we've got about 22 minutes left. Hopefully it's enough time to cover at least a decent portion of this article. I had about 12 more prepared. Just in case I ran out of things to talk about, but this has been such a fascinating show. David Brown really kicked it off this morning. So please, you know, go back and listen to the podcast. We went in directions I never thought that we would go, because it never occurred to me, but it occurred to him, and I'm glad he did. And so this is why I love the spontaneous nature of this show, that we go where we go. I mean, you know, most of it's unplanned. In fact, every once in a while I have to change the title of the show. It's so different from what we started. Okay. I used to live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there was a fabulous talk show host named Jeff Metcalf, and I listened to him for years. I called his show several times when I was able to, and we're still, you know, in contact. And so hopefully I'll get him back. He was on my show back at WBY, and so hopefully he'll come back on. But he had a recurring guest named DV Kidd. That's DEVVYKIDD. And they were part of the Patriot Movement, you know, back during the Obama days. And so it was, I think, in Clinton days too. I'm trying to think. Anyway, they've been a part of the American Patriot Movement for a long time, which would be like the Tea Party, which would be you know, a bunch of different things now. So it's not, you know, so much a defined group as a bunch of groups, you know, and all centers, like Bikers for Trump, it all centers around, you know, making America great again. You know, that's what this is. So we're kind of coalescing. But anyway, DV Kidd, you probably haven't heard of her. She's an activist, writer, researcher, reporter. I want to get her on the show, because I'm hoping she'll report and write and research our bills, because that's one of those things that will jumpstart us into huge national prominence. We're on the way. Thank you for the new listeners. I mean, I really appreciate you here. So the best thing you can do is share our show and realize that there's a source of information that doesn't just, you know, report what's already happened, but we talk about what can happen. We talk about where the future can be. We investigate areas and speculate and, you know, take you into places you never thought that, you know, any radio show would go, because we don't treat you like an idiot. We don't treat you like a 12-year-old because our market researchers tell us to. We don't give you 2-minute short little format things because they, you know, their consultants tell you that you're all idiots. We don't do anything like that. Back to this article. So the article is titled, "If Contested States Decertify Biden as Winner, Will It Cause Mass Violence?" It's an interesting question. So let me just read it. The article pretty much stands on its own. I don't have to describe it. I'd rather just get into this here. She says, "The nasty and reprehensible actions in contested states regarding audits currently underway by Democrats has backfired. Too many voters, regardless of party, are asking the one basic question. If the 2020 election was fair and counting of votes accurate, why fight these audits if they would prove the election was not stolen in favor of cheating China Joe? The answer is obvious even to the most obtuse." We'll love using that word in conversation. "I feel comfortable in saying a huge percentage of Americans, whether they voted or not, have no idea what's been going on. They read a headline or two offered up by the DNC's pimps on the stupid tube, TV in parentheses, or some, quote, news website or YouTube's disclaimer, Biden won the election. All this fuss is from sore losers who voted for Trump. Conspiracy theories, blah, blah, blah." Okay. At the bottom of this column is another breakdown by state of the disgusting, dirty fighting going on over audits. You know, they are new since my last two, and there's another thing here and here. Okay. So I post this article. It's on my Facebook page. Okay. For those that are friends, and I'll put it on the Action Radio group for the general public. That's you. And so if you want to take a look, I think it's there, but I'll do it after the show. Anyway, and you can just go to, you know, dvkid.com. And read all this really cool stuff. But this is what she says. "There are some who believe President-elect Donald Trump betrayed everyone by walking away on January 20th, 2021. Okay, so this was just written May 31st. You know, this is only, you know, a couple months ago. So when she talks about President-elect Donald Trump, that was intentional. Okay, he is the president-elect. He won the election. He hasn't been inaugurated yet. So in other words, the 2020 election hasn't gone forward with the legitimate winner. Now, there's a resident in the White House, but there's not a president. See the difference? Resident with an R. Okay. There's somebody who was installed in the White House, but he wasn't inaugurated because he couldn't, because he lost. Okay. This is what we're talking about here. Oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist, Greg. Yeah. I just love it. You know, you're a racist. There's another mantra. You're a racist. You're a conspiracy theorist. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, gentlest, most wonderful human being, you know, whoever lives. You know, vaccines are safe and effective. They've been tested thoroughly. They're monitored closely. You know, Joe Biden won the election. You know, again, what's the difference? What's the difference? All right, back to the article. "There are some who believe," all right, so, well, I might as well start there. "There are some who believe President-elect Donald Trump betrayed everyone by walking away on January 20th, 2021. There was an inauguration day, or installation day, for those that don't know. She says, "What should he have done? Barricade himself in the White House? Courts in contested states were cowards. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court violated federal law by allowing mail-in ballots be counted 3 days past Election Day. The other five contested state officials also violated federal law. Those massive ballot dumps in the middle of the night in Pennsylvania and Georgia should never have been counted. The U.S. Supreme Court acted like cowards, ignoring, as did other courts, gross violations of state election laws, and the list goes on." Does that make it pretty clear? Okay, you got a good picture of what's happening here, folks? It's not that the courts overturned, you know, Trump's appeals. No, they never took the cases. And they didn't do what they should have done, and they did do what they shouldn't have done. So the courts are hopeless. Back to the article. In his excellent May 28, 2021 column, Lex Green summed up what others think. Quote, "I believe Trump was positioned to stop the steal before leaving office. But I also believe he chose to leave the White House in peace to avoid fatal threats against himself and his family until he could prove to the entire world what really happened in the 2020 elections." I want to let that sink in for a little bit, okay? So we don't know the death threats he got. We don't know the pressures. We don't know what actually happened. We don't know that the Justice Department didn't threaten him. We don't know that the FBI didn't threaten him. We don't know that members of Congress and the deep state didn't threaten him. We don't know that major members of media, Antifa, BLM, we don't know who threatened him, but I bet you somebody did, and I bet you a lot of somebodies did. So think about that. You know, I'm going to read that quote again because it's really quite significant. "I believe Trump was positioned to stop the steal before leaving office." I believe he was too. Okay. So in other words, he didn't have to go. That's what they said. This is all new, folks. This is all new information, right? I'm sure for most of you. He didn't have to go, but he did. He chose to strategically. And he says, and this quote from Lex Green, "But I also believe he chose to leave the White House in peace to avoid fatal threats against death threats, folks, against himself and his family until he could prove to the entire world what is what really happened in the 2020 elections. Okay, enter Mike Lindell. Okay, what's Mike Lindell been doing? You know, what's Mike Lindell been doing for months? You know, he's been proving that Trump won the election. He's been systematically, you know, putting the evidence together, the computer evidence, the Dominion voting machines. He's got the forensic experts. He's got all this stuff. And there's going to be a huge conference in August talking about all this. Okay? You think that's for nothing? No, it's to put Trump in office where he belongs. That's what this is about. That is the insurrection. That is the steal. That is the crime of the century. January 6th is the commission, the January 6th commission, and all the information coming out from the left on January 6th is an attempt to rewrite history and change your perceptions and you know, create a reality that never, you know, create a false reality and a false narrative. That's what's going on. Back to the article. Trump knows much more than you or I do about the steal. There's a whole lot, you know, going on by many IT experts, that'd be and volunteers, that'd be the Mike Lindell folks. This nightmare is far from over. Many questions do remain unanswered. In Green's column above, he lays out what he calls the Trump plan. Here's what must be done at the state level. The audits must continue, despite Herculean efforts to stop them by the Democrats using every dirty trick in the book. Once the first state falls, it will be the domino effect because there's just too much evidence the election clearly was stolen from Trump and the American people. Yeah, this is what I've said too. You can't have an election in 2022 until you fix 2020. Once the first state falls, the others, you know, the others will come and will fall in line too. And after Arizona, it's going to be Georgia, Pennsylvania, probably Wisconsin. But after Georgia and Pennsylvania, you know, rescind their state legislatures, which they have the constitutional duty. Slow down, Greg. Duty to do. if they you know, reverse their electors, and say that they are Trump electors, that we're certifying these as Trump electors. Send them in, and if the combined electors, which I believe they are, I haven't done the numbers for a while, but Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona combined would be enough to put Trump over 270 and make him, you know, in a position to be inaugurated as president like he should have been. Isn't this fascinating? You got to dig for the real sources. The real information's out there. You just got to look around for it. It's not hard to find. All right. Back to the article. The Democrat machine, as well as those involved in stealing the election, are experiencing major pucker factor right at this point. They know the noose is tightening. The scramble has already begun. They're freaked. Fulton County election officials hire top Georgia defense attorneys. That's May 27, 21. That's a headline. You can look that one up. The people of, like I said, I'll post this article at the Action Radio Group after the show so you can find it. The people of Atlanta are paying top dollar to a pricey legal firm to represent their county officials. It must be nice to defend yourself with other people's money. Yeah. And where do these government officials get off using taxpayer money, you know, to cover their crimes? I would make a law against that. You know, if you're accused of a crime in office, you can't use taxpayer money to defend yourself. Sorry. You know, no, unless private citizens can use taxpayer money to defend themselves. Well, I guess public defenders are that, but that is another issue. Back to the article. The Democrats have thrown everything possible at those conducting the audit in Maricopa County, Arizona, including threats from the Federal Department of Injustice. That was intentional. And it's in the article. I didn't make that up. You know, but that's what we call it. The Federal Department of Justice, who have no jurisdiction to interfere with a county vote audit. You get that, folks? The Department of Injustice has no jurisdiction to interfere with a county vote audit any more than they have the ability to rewrite law when it comes to vaccines. I'll tell you, I may not get to this today. I might do it tomorrow. First half hour, we should probably talk about this. But, you know, the Department of Justice has said that employers can mandate vaccines and so can schools and other places. No, they can't. You know, in fact, it says very clearly in the law that, you know, you have the right to accept or decline, you know, vaccines. You know, I'll put that in Action Radio Group too. It's very clear. So what the Justice Department, the Department of Injustice did, because they're good at it now, they said the law doesn't say what the law says. The law says what we say it is, and we say you have to take it. We say they can mandate it, even though the law says you can't mandate it. Okay, you get that? So the Department of Justice has now taken on the role of the courts. They've taken on the interpretation of the law, which I thought was not part of the courts anyway. The real interpretation goes on in juries, who say whether the law was, you know, is just and was applied appropriately, and whether it should exist at all. And they do that through either you know, conviction or nullification. That's how it works. All right. Such a beautiful mess we're in right now. All right, so back to the article. Since Arizona's mess started It's funny. Arizona's mess started. Other states and counties have also been fighting like junkyard dogs to stop the truth from coming out. But it will. Mike Lindell made a forceful statement last week. Mike Lindell says his royal flush of election fraud evidence will make it to the Supreme Court by July. Well, that's now. I think it's going to be August. That's when they've moved the conference to August. So let's just say it's going to happen by August. We're getting these attorney generals on board, Mike Lindell says. When they're on board, then lawyers right now are writing up the case as we speak. Oh, there we go. When they're on board, you know, then the lawyers right now are writing up the case as we speak. So, yeah, it's happening. So the case for the Supreme Court's already being drafted. Isn't that nice? Don't you feel better? This is all going to be over. Yay. I wonder what they're going to do with Biden and Harris. What are we going to do with all the Democrats who knew, the accomplices? What about the Republicans who knew this was a fraud? They're accomplices, too. What about the news media that knew it was a fraud? They're accomplices, too. This is going to be one hell of an arrest, mass arrest. Can't wait. Okay. Article goes on. Oh, I might even get through most of this. Then in 5 or 6 weeks, you know, we'll take it to the Supreme Court. We set it on their doorstep, Lindell said. If they accept it, which they will vote 9-0 because it's so obvious and you can't lie. Well, see, I don't think it's that cut and dried. You know, I think Mike Lindell believes that the Supreme Court will take it. I don't necessarily think they will. I think, you know, by law they have to because it's their duty to rule on or give an opinion, you know, deciding presidential elections, you know, if it can't be decided anywhere else. However, we, you know, they didn't take the Texas case and they were constitutionally bound to take that too. So who knows what's going to happen? I'd be curious to see overwhelming evidence. You know, I don't know. We'll talk about other options at a different show. I want to get you the information right now. The U.S. Supreme Court's session began October 2020 and runs until October 2021. They got a couple months left. However, they take a summer recess, usually at the end of June, July at the latest. Many of them go to foreign countries to teach law for 3 months. Oh, isn't that special? Even if the court agrees to hear the case, which I highly doubt, it would be a long shot for the court to take it up until late August when they return. I'm not a lawyer, but I think you can request an emergency hearing. However, considering what happened with the court already, well, place your bet. Yeah, I'm with Evie. I don't think there's any – I think Mike Lindell's being hopelessly optimistic, thinking the Supreme Court will take it up. I think they'll have to be forced to take it up. That's why I think that's going to go. Back to Mike. Mike Lindell is a true champion who's been working in overdrive to expose the steal at great personal sacrifice. Even though I didn't need new pillows, I bought two of his pillows last month. Well, that's kind of cute. Time will tell with going to the Supreme Court. Okay. We can all pray that they take the case. Of course, there's no guarantee a couple of, quote, conservatives won't turn on him. Yeah. For sure, John Roberts. Not to mention enormous pressure underway to get 82-year-old Justice Breyer to retire so the Democrats don't end up like what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg refusing to retire under Obama. Okay. I don't believe the Supreme Court is where this is going to end up. I just don't. I think it's going to be the state legislatures are going to overturn it. I think that it's going to go to Congress. And then it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. And this is where we're going to see if the gelding old party, the Republicans, you know, how many members are actually going to stand up and demand that January 6th happen again. No, not a protest and a walk and all. That's not what I'm talking about. But the elector count, okay? The elector count that certified Biden, you know, when there was no evidence to certify Biden because they hadn't gone through. There was no formal process that would have certified Biden because they didn't go through the elector count, okay? They still have to go through that elector count. Tomorrow I'm going to look into this. I call it the talk, okay? So the talk is what happened between when Arizona was brought up and the first senator, I think it was Josh Hawley, who said, yes, I want to count these. And then all of a sudden, the people walked into the Capitol, you know, the operatives, FBI, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, you know, the operatives walked in. And a bunch of Trump followers after the speech. See, this is where the timeline doesn't work, right? Because Trump was speaking at the time that the people walked into the Capitol. Now, why did they walk in when they did? Because they had to interrupt Arizona being counted. They had to make sure that Arizona electors weren't challenged. That's what January 6th was all about. Okay, it has nothing to do with Trump supporters walking in. Trump supporters just walked in because the doors were open. Okay, that's why Trump supporters walked in. All right, they walked in because they were going to the Capitol to support what Congress was doing. And this is the thing people miss too. Trump supporters went to the Capitol to support the counting of the electors and the challenge to those counts. That's it. That's why they were there. So could Mike Pence have, gone in and said, hey, you know, we're going to hold this up until we're going to take this up again tomorrow. He could have. He should have. He didn't. Why? Because he's a communist deep state operative. That's why. Just like Dr. Fascist is a genocidal, sociopathic, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. I mean, these people are what they are. Right? And they shouldn't be where they are. Because we've got some of the worst people in the country in the most powerful positions. All right. So that's what's going on. So what happens when the states decertify Biden? Biden electors? I don't know. You know, that's the big question, but we'll see what happens. All right. So last article, last bit of the article. Well, it's actually more of the article. Wayne Allyn Root recently interviewed Trump and proposed he run for the U.S. House in Florida. And once elected, he would then get elected as Speaker of the House. The Speaker of the U.S. House is the second most powerful person in D.C. That's true. All bills of expenditure, in other words, money, must originate in the House. The Speaker is also third in line of succession. So in other words, if the life of the president has ended, then the life of the vice president has ended, then the Speaker of the House is next in line. So they call it the order of succession. Okay. Now, generally what happened is if the tragedy, whatever tragedy befalls the president and the president's life has ended, the vice president takes over, right? The vice president will then appoint another vice president. Okay. So it doesn't get to the Speaker of the House generally, but the contingency plan is there for a calamity that, you know, ends the life of the president, vice president, Speaker of the House, and then I think it's Secretary of State after that, and then it goes back to Senate, and it kind of goes back and forth. I'm not sure the exact order, but there is a succession order such that if something really happened, you know, if, you know, say that 9/11 had happened to, God forbid, you know, the government in Washington, there is an order of succession. Anyway, 4 minutes left. Okay, there's only 4 minutes left. How did that happen? All right. So I'm rambling here. So hopefully you're taking all this information and you find out, you're finding out what you want to find out. All right, back to the article. And I'm not going to finish it, but I will post it. However, even if Trump thinks it's a good idea, there are too many rhinos hiding in plain sight in both chambers of Congress, not to mention GOP Trump haters in the House, that'd be Cheney, who are very vocal about how much they hate him. What revenge it would be to stick it in Trump's back. He gets elected to the House, defeated as Speaker, and relegated to rather small committees normally assigned to incoming freshmen. Yeah. See, I don't think it's a good idea for him to run for the House. I think he's better off where he is. Article says, what has to be done once the audit results are known? My May 3rd, 2021 column, which I will read and post that probably too, 2020 election audits, what's the end game plan, dealt with the bottom line. Decertification of the vote count in contested states. Get that? Decertification. All right. So in other words, you know, the states that vote fraud like the idea of decertifying an entire state, because entire states aren't the problem. Corrupt counties are. So I would not decertify a state vote. I would decertify a county vote. Maricopa County vote in Arizona should be decertified. Fulton County, basically Atlanta in Georgia, should be decertified. You know, these other places, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia County. I think it's Philadelphia County. Maybe there's another name for it. Anyway, Philadelphia, that voting county should be decertified. Because that's Detroit, Michigan. Detroit's vote needs to be decertified because that's where the fraud is, okay? So where you find massive amounts of fraud, even if you don't have the exact elector count, because you'll never know. I mean, the election ballot count. You'll never have the exact ballot count because it's fraud. That's the whole point of fraud. You never know the exact result. But all you have to establish is that there is fraud, and that's enough to decertify a county. So if you decertify Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Phoenix, which is where Maricopa County is, that's it. Then winner Trump, you know, has more than enough electors to, you know, be where he should be, which is in the White House. Big quote here. When all the audits are done and Trump comes out the winner, what next? Here's another quote. Biden and Ho Harris. That's interesting. This is Biden and Ho Harris. I'm not making that up. It just says that. All right. Must not remain in office. If Trump is declared the winner, then he is president-elect. What should happen when the evidence is clear and overwhelming? Quote, lawmakers in the audited states and voters in those states must demand their secretaries of state rescind certification of the vote and certify for President Trump. Yes, I know. Things like thugs and paid. Oh, that's my 90-second warning. Yes, I know. Thugs, paid Marxists out there, you know, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, you know, as well as, you know, Biden voters who don't give a damn about the evidence will threaten civil war, burn cities and kill people. Yes, they will. Quote, is fine. Go ahead and make your threats, but you don't leave someone in office, and I don't care who they are, if it is proven beyond any legal threshold that that individual, in this case Biden and Harris, was declared the winner through fraud. Fraud is a crime. It says, I have not changed my position on this, and as the audits get complicated, decertification is the legal solution. Will it happen? I don't know. There's more to this article. I'm going to pick this up tomorrow. This is such a fascinating thing. This has been quite an interesting show to do because of where we've gone with this, into the psychology, into the psychosis, into the propaganda, into brainwashing, into the election, into what people believe and they don't believe. You know, it's quite fascinating. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Leave comments on the show. I'll be posting it on Facebook, Action Radio with Greg Penglis. Of course, it's going to be, you know, at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And I'm pretty much done. So let me just give you my, our basic information. Well, I gave it to you. The website, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. If you want to support us, patreon.com/actionradio. If you want to listen to us in your vehicle, simply put Action Radio with the Blog Talk address I gave you in your cell phone, connect that to your vehicle audio, and away you go. And I'll be back. Boy, I've talked a lot this show. I will be back tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the morning, Central Time.